How are we doing, Kim? With
we're looking good, Peter.
Looking good. All righty. All right, then we will call the March 15th meeting of the Municipal Services Committee together. And if we could first maybe do some introductions before we get into the business part of the meeting. So again, I'm Peter Sousa, town manager here in Windsor. And Kim, could you perhaps show the, so we see each other's faces, or am I just?
Stop sharing.
Let me stop sharing. He's asking for a second.
Stop, there you go.
Great. All right, so there we can put names and faces together. So, so I'm just gonna call out folks as you go around. And Kim, you're the first one I see. So if you want to introduce yourself.
Sure thing. Hi, everyone. My name is Kim Bona. I am a program manager here at CROG.
Great. Pauline and Matt.
Pauline Yoder, Chief Operating Officer at CROG.
Matt Hart, Executive Director, CROG. I'm in my third week.
Alrighty. Good job. We'll save our guests for a moment. Then maybe we just go through the different committee, other staff members and committee members that are on board. Maybe Bonnie, if you want to.
Bonnie Therrien, I'm the interim town manager in Wethersfield.
Good to see you, Bonnie.
You too, Peter.
Robin Nichols.
Good afternoon, Robin Nichols, Principal Program Manager, Municipal Services with CROG.
Great. Grace.
Hi, everybody. Grace Tiaz, the Assistant Town Manager in the town of Avon.
All righty, why don't we just sneak over to Simsbury, Melissa?
Hi, everyone. Melissa Appleby, Deputy Town Manager in Simsbury.
All right. John, you want to go next up in Coventry?
Sure. John Alcister, Town Manager of Coventry.
All righty. And we have Mark Walter, Columbia.
Mark Walter's here, yes.
All righty. And then I see a few folks on here. Eric, other staff members from CROG?
Hi, Eric Snowden, IT and GIS coordinator for CROG.
Welcome. Who else do we have online that I may have missed other than our guests? We have
David Norris.
All right, David looks like he's tied up. And then we, who else do we have there? I see
Dana.
Good morning, Dana McGee, Director of Human Resources and Legal Compliance for the town of Rocky Hill. Hi, Kim, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And how about our guests, if they would like to introduce themselves at this point? Antonio?
Hello, everyone. I'm Tony Rodriguez, and I'm president of Daniel Penn Associates, and we look forward to speaking with you a little later on.
I'm Steve Mueller. I'm director of operations with Daniel Penn Associates.
Excellent, Steve.
I'm Yvonne Olson. I'm a lead DEIB consultant with Daniel Penn.
Nice to meet you.
Hi, Leroy Thompson, also a lead DI consultant with Daniel Penn.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for introducing yourselves. We'll go through a few business items, and then we'll get right into presentation from Daniel Penn and folks. So we have, can I have a motion on the adoption of the minutes for the January 18th, 2022 meeting?
So move.
Thank you, Bonnie. Second, anyone?
John Alcister, second.
Thank you, John. Any corrections or adjustments to those minutes as presented? All right, hearing none. All those in favor of adopting us as presented, please say aye. Or wave your hand, something like that.
Aye.
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 Great. Any folks abstaining?
I'll abstain. This is Melissa. I was not there.
All righty. Thank you very much for taking care of that. And Kim, Do we have anyone that like to speak at this point during public comment? Please raise your hand so we can recognize you. And I don't see anyone raising their hand. Kim, do you?
I do not. I think we're good.
All righty. Thank you very much. And so now we move to our item three, which are presentations. And Pauline, would you like to do a brief introduction of how we've gotten to this point, bringing on Daniel Penn and Associates?
If I may put her on the spot, I'll have Kim do the introduction since she's the one who brought us through the whole process.
Sure. Fabulous.
So CROG had put out an RFP for DEI training services. And after interviewing our top three firms, it was unanimously decided that Daniel Penn should be the fit for this job. So we are happy to have with us today, Antonio, or Tony Rodriguez, who is the president and owner of Daniel Penn Associates. And they're going to just share with us a little bit about their training services and a little bit about their company. And without further ado, I will turn it over to you, Tony.
Well, thank you, Kim. And good afternoon, everyone. As I mentioned, I'm Tony Rodriguez, and I'm president of Daniel Penn Associates. We are a certified minority business enterprise, both by DAS, DBE by DOT, and also by the Greater New England Minority Supply Development Council. And we thank you for the opportunity to present our consulting capabilities to you today and our training capabilities as well. First, we are incredibly excited and pleased to have been awarded this contract to support CROG with their initiatives here in terms of DEI and their improvement efforts. And we look forward to collaborating with you on this most important journey. Our company, Daniel Penn Associates, supports clients throughout the US in improving organizational effectiveness and culture, but also operational efficiencies. We work collaborative with clients. Our methods engages employees, addresses sensitive issues, reduces defensiveness, and also facilitate learning. And you're going to hear from an exceptional team of consultants that have helped many clients implement DEI change that is sustainable and measurable. And you know, our approach is, as you can see in our slide, is hands-on. We work with our clients to understand their current DEI status and then develop strategies, whether it's training or otherwise, develop strategies that are really support their DEI goals and initiative, and that also will have a profound impact on the organization's short, medium, and long-term organizational growth and behavior. Change in terms of what we do, the practices we put in place, and how we behave does not happen overnight. It requires a sustained effort. And our goal is to work with each member of CROG to assist them to achieve that. We have, as I mentioned, a team of exceptional consultants. Each of them will introduce themselves to you and they will provide you with both Leroy as well as Yvonne will provide you with their information. Steve Mueller is our director of operation and will provide administrative support to the team. And of course, we will bring a full complement of our consultancy team to support Leroy and Yvonne's leadership and success in helping CROG members really achieve their DEI goals. Steve, next. Now, Leroy, would you introduce yourself?
I certainly will. Once again, Leroy Thompson. In terms of experience, I've worked with a lot of organizations across the sectors. Actually began work in this area in the mid-1990s. Back then, it was called diversity. you know, because we had a really difficult time addressing some of these issues. So we've made some pretty significant strides. One of the differences, as you can see, in terms of these four areas is the importance of gathering really good information to address these issues. So the audits and assessments are a critical part because, you know, every organization is going to have a fairly broad range of issues around equity and inclusion and belonging. And the important thing is to make sure that we're actually focusing on the highest priority ones. And in the work that we do, high priority is connected to which issues have the greatest impact in terms of organizational productivity. The other element is the idea of having an overall game plan and overall strategy for the work. Because of the emotional nature of this kind of work, it's really good to have a clear incremental approach in terms of addressing the issues. And a lot of the hypothesis around this, again, is gained from the audits and assessments. So trying to understand what each town, each organization's specific sensitivities, specific obstacles, and most importantly, the real opportunities that this particular area provides. Training and facilitation is really about dialogue. The fact of the matter is, of course, you know, you can't train someone to be more culturally sensitive. You can't train someone to have a sense of inclusion, but you can do a couple of critical things. One is to provide some tools and techniques to get over some of those initial barriers. And most importantly, again, any training and facilitation is really all about dialogue. If we can kind of, I'd like to say level set the playing field to recognize that the difficult issues kind of are common to human beings. We sort of address this almost on a neurobiological basis, right? Bias and the issues that make diversity, equity, inclusion, and difficulty kind of come with the territory. And once we're able to do that, then people can really engage and not feel defensive, put on the fingers pointed, and feel comfortable recognizing, yeah, you know, we all have some issues individually to address, and of course, organizationally as well. And so that's the real critical part of the training and facilitation element. And then equity itself is a very different aspect of this. It really is focusing on systems and processes and procedures. And it's really helpful to have kind of a work plan to once again, to get to the data and to identify where the disparities exist inside the organization, and quite often, especially in the public sector, outside the organization, in terms of the delivery of programs and services, that's where we make really critical progress in terms of DEI. And so a little bit of background on my approach, and I'll turn it over to Yvonne.
Afternoon, everyone. So glad to see several of you again. So piggybacking, I guess you could say, on what Leroy has already presented, you know, I as well share a strong passion and purpose for this work. I have worked across industries for nonprofit, for-profit, paramilitary organizations as well. As Leroy already mentioned, data, right? I mean, data is very critical to what it is that we do, both from a qualitative and quantitative standpoint. And it is the data that we look to help tell the story of where individuals and organizations are on their diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging journeys. And so it's really critical that we have the opportunity to acquire that data via various modes, whether that is an online digital assessment, focus groups, individual interviews, et cetera. And then really taking that data, aggregating it all, analyzing it, to really help us to uncover those opportunities and the potential barriers that Leroy spoke about. And then the trainings and the workshops, right? Really taking a prescriptive approach for each individual town is going to be critical to this. And this is why acquiring that important data upfront is so very important, as to lead us in the right direction, to essentially be our compass as we proceed and progress with individual towns on their journeys. And then offering and ensuring that we're holding space, right, for executives and individual coaching. It's really important that, especially for today's leaders, they have the opportunity to ask important questions, to raise their concerns, their fears, their trepidations about functioning in this space and engaging with others without fear of retribution, But really, we want to focus on helping to equip leaders to be able to have those brave conversations and to even perhaps every now and then make a mistake and to know that we're all human. We're all on this journey together, and to make sure that you feel fully supported as you're trying to execute DEIB within your organizations. And then lastly, you know, it's important that while we go through doing these trainings and workshops, we want to make sure that we equip each town with a learning continuum. And so whether that's creating digital assets that can be used with learning management systems, or if that's some in-person work that we can do through various groups within the organization, we want to make sure that we give each town what it needs to be best equipped to be on where they are in this journey right now and where they're looking to go over the long term. So we want to make sure that we're supporting all of the engagement needs and the resource needs of each individual town. And so with that, I will go to the next slide, Steve. And so with this, as I've already mentioned, those data-driven assessments are really going to help once again tell that story to make sure that we're being as intentional and prescriptive as possible. What one town is dealing with versus another might very much vary based on the stakeholders, right? So whether those are internal stakeholders as well as perhaps your external stakeholders, those each town is serving best. And what we'll do is we will use that information to customize the content to ensure that we're having a strong relevancy to the exact audiences that we're dealing with. We're going to make sure we customize a strategic framework for each to figure out what is it that is going to resonate best and how we can help to affect change the most with each individual municipality. As mentioned, we're going to build out resources that can be used, again, taking into consideration and contemplating the exact audiences that we're working with. One town might say, hey, you know, we have a great LMS system. Can you digitize something for us? Whereas another town might say, you know what, we don't have that much advanced technology. Can you create some opportunities for us to dialogue more internally and in group settings? And so we have the capabilities in order to achieve that for both. And then we want to make sure that we are measuring progress. That's very important in the DEIB space. We want to be able to benchmark where you will begin and where you're going and how you are succeeding, whether those are big successes that you're having or even micro successes along the way, and that we're able to measure the progress over time so we can celebrate those wins with you. And then we can be even more prescriptive and intentional around real big areas of opportunity. So with that, if you would go to the next slide. Leroy, back to you.
Absolutely. You know, every sector has its particular issues and challenges, and we've learned a lot over the years in working with municipal government. What has made most municipal government successful really is the passion and the dedication of people in the workplace who have that real sense of public service. And these particular issues, especially issues around inclusion and belonging, if they aren't addressed effectively, they eat away at that passion. They eat away at that sense of contribution and the power of public service. And so we have a particular sense and understanding of these. All of these are really difficult challenges to address without, again, a pretty good game plan. I think the common theme here is so much, of course, of the impetus for change, the pressures that that people face in municipal government organizations comes from the outside, and having to react to that and to make sure we maintain the requisite level of productivity can be pretty difficult. And so we have a real sensitivity to all of these. I'd probably highlight kind of in the middle there, antiquated policies and procedures. Here is where a focus on equity can make a really significant difference, because so much of the wear and tear in organizations comes not so much from the strategic issues that we face and kind of where we're headed, you know, in terms of mission, but the obstacles in getting the everyday work done. And so this is, I think, a really critical frontier. I'd also kind of highlight the next to last one, in terms of, again, different levels of cultural competency, being able to navigate the fact that different types of organizational settings have a different take on this. You know, you can go from one department to another or even one office within a department, and it's like going to a different country, right? Very different culture, very different way of doing things. And so those all present challenges. And again, our work here is really designed to present a unique approach to really help to leverage some of those challenges. And again, it all comes back to the real reason for a focus on DEI and B, and that is, again, enhancing organizational productivity. So we believe we have a unique approach in terms of how we address that. The one of the reasons that I teamed up with Daniel Penn 3 years ago was the idea of having a structure in which to take this work on. A lot of cases, diversity, equity, and inclusion are sort of seen as actually fitting together, and they're very, very different approaches and a different focus. But the lean process gives us a methodology for making sure, one, we've covered all the bases. Secondly, we can break issues into incremental tasks. And most importantly, as that first bullet suggests, is the idea of promoting engagement. You've seen, I'm sure, in your careers, a lot of these great ideas come and go, whether it was total quality management or strategic planning or team building. They come and go because they don't get traction. In a lot of cases, it's because a lack of that ownership. And of course, the third bullet, I think, is pretty critical, and that is being a diverse organization ourselves. We really have the ability to be sensitive to pretty much every issue that we face in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and that leverages it, you know, significantly. And finally, the idea of combining, you know, the qualitative and the quantitative disciplines with what Yvonne spoke to, and that is appreciating the nature of this journey and being able to walk together with organizations as they confront these issues. To us, that's really the critical thing around cultural transformation, making sure that we engage both, having a clear focus on data, but understanding, again, the way we're built as people and the importance of getting us involved in a process of change. And so we believe, and we've seen results in other client organizations about the uniqueness, especially of combining what we do with the methodology of the lean approach.
And I think what, you know, just to wrap this up in terms of our capabilities is, you know, it's beyond training. And what we call it that in any organization, you need to have an effort, a strategic direction, a plan as to how you're going to get there. And even if you're looking at training, that we would want to be able to work with each town to identify, well, where are you at with that journey, to be able to determine what is the content of that training that really would support the goals of the town and the organization, and sort of driving that across the organization and the types of things that we would do, from prescriptive training and workshops depending on their particular need, the kind of coaching and facilitation that may need to take place for not only leadership but all levels of management to really focus our work with directors and boards and strategic teams. In terms of change management, I mentioned earlier, you know, that change doesn't happen overnight. And certainly it requires a level of change management that is applied in order to be able to really sustain a program. And the most critical component of all of this is really the sustainability. How do we build the roadmap, the organization, the structure internally with the resources to make sure that DEI, it's an ongoing focus of the organization. And you know, it's a similar approach that we apply, as Leroy mentioned, in the lean world. And to really take a look in many cases at the policies and the procedures in place that in fact may impact your goals and your objectives, and how do we address that? And certainly to develop, you know, the internal capabilities in terms of DEI and belonging committees, to look at, you know, employee resource groups or business resource groups, and other cultural support programs that really enable the organization to grow in terms of its cultural improvement efforts, and really to bring best practices and resources and tools to the table. And I can't think of, you know, better tools and consultants than what you just able to experience with Leroy and Yvonne. Steve? So with that in mind, we'd be happy to answer any questions. I know that we're trying to rush through this. We have a limited amount of time in these things, and we can certainly spend all afternoon, but we take any questions you have for me or the team.
Great. Thank you very much, Tony and associates. Open it up to members of the committee for questions they may have at this point. Just speak up because I can't see everyone. So just jump on in our usual informal approach here.
So is private pricing based on what you want to put together for the community?
Can you explain what you mean in terms of?
Like if you just wanted to work on diversity or if you just wanted to work on lean government or.
Well, yeah, lean government is totally different, right? In terms of that. And we have a master contract with the state that you can tap into that. But in terms of the particular program and the particular award here is to really deal with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And certainly our focus will be any town that's interested, we can either do a strategic assessment to see where they're at and put together a program of that would require. If you're only looking at training, there's specific training and workshops that we have identified. But even with that in mind, you know, it's to be able to understand, well, what are you trying to achieve with that training? And be able to make sure that you get in the value of the training that you're looking for. Yvonne, Leroy, you want to add anything to that?
No, I think you captured it pretty well. You know, we do have a generic approach, but we try to understand, you know, each individual situation. And so the pricing of the effort, you know, goes in line with what the best solution for that particular town or organization might be.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions? Robert.
Yeah, I guess, Peter, I just want to kind of make sure I understand the answer to that last question. So that if we wanted to get some training for the town of Canton, we would have to, you know, have you come out, meet with us, and then you would give us a price for that? Or is there a price list that we could get in advance just to idea of the magnitude of the cost?
There is a price list within our proposal that you can take a look at. And I think one of the challenges then when you do training is to make sure that it's prescriptive to your need. So yes, would we want to come out and certainly chat and work with you on and that's not may not be a lot of upfront work, but really to make sure that do what we have already, would that, you know, respond to what you're looking for, or is there an additional need that we need to maybe tweak the training or develop some additional curriculum for you? And that will always be priced out before you move forward. But there is some specific pricing in the proposal that Kim has that really tells you, you know, based on that request, the different levels of training.
Great, thank you. And Kim, you can send me that contract. Great, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Any other questions?
I see Matt.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Thank you, Tony, and everyone else involved in the presentation. I was really impressed with a lot of things I heard. I'm recently coming from another member town, the town of West Hartford, and we engaged in a similar exercise over a year or so. And one of the things we focused on, or let me back up for a second. I think when people first hear about this work or they're introduced to this space, they think it primarily impacts human resources, right? Recruiting, retention, promotions, et cetera. And one of the challenges we faced is how do we make equity and inclusion part of our organizational culture, our DNA? you know, and make it part of our everyday decisions, whether it's programming, budgeting, what have you. So could you elaborate just a little bit on that piece?
Leroy, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, sure. It certainly is common, you know, Matt, to think that it's really all about just HR and dealing with the personnel part. But here's where it's so critical to appreciate the distinctions between diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. So, for example, equity, in most instances, there's probably a greater need to approach equity in terms of service delivery of an organization than necessarily what's going on internally. So, for example, every community across the country is grappling with healthcare disparities. Different communities get different results in terms of healthcare. The same thing would be for, you know, any sort of services that are provided, and that's really where the equity issues are really, they tend to be with service delivery. Inclusion and belonging is centered in the people side of things, but it really is a leadership issue more than an HR issue. And so we'd kind of take a different approach in terms of that. As Yvonne mentioned, it's about culture, you know, creating a culture where people feel and know that there aren't any hindrances to, you know, making their best contribution. So, you know, we definitely broaden it beyond that and make a clear distinction in terms of what we're addressing between diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging as well. Yvonne, you want to jump in as well?
Thank you, Leroy. Yes, I echo Leroy's sentiments. I mean, certainly there is, as we know it, the business case for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I think, Matt, what you're speaking to is what we know is the human case for DEIB, right? And that's really contemplating the individuals and looking at people not necessarily as resources that can be interchanged as needed, but really kind of investing in the people themselves, making sure that the organization is very clear about the value that those individuals have upon the organization, have upon its core values and its mission, whether they're dealing internally with one another or externally with your stakeholders. And so that is just a critical piece to this. And I think one of the unique things with Daniel Penn is that we, as Leroy spoke about that head and heart approach, we bring that to the forefront as we're engaging with each different municipality. We understand what needs to be done in terms of upskilling and increasing intercultural competencies. But in addition to that is we want to make sure that we tap in to the hearts and minds of individuals, especially the heart space, which we feel is really key to sustainable change. Leroy and I often say, you know, you can teach DEIB concepts all day long, and what that will yield ultimately is compliance. And we're sure that nobody's interested in compliance. You're looking for people to take this, to internalize this, and this to become more about who they are and the fabric of your organization, so that no matter where they are, whether they're in the workplace, the home place, out in community, these principles prevail within the individual.
Thank you.
Right. Anybody else have any questions? This is quite a large undertaking. Town of Windsor has done some of the initial work in terms of just basic skill building and competency. And so we have not yet, you know, taken that next step into doing assessments. And that's what we're contemplating at this point for the coming fiscal year. So anybody else have any questions or thoughts at this time regarding the DEI?
Robin has a...
I know we typically don't speak at these meetings, but this is an issue that we're going to be bringing up in our next article for CROG. So is there anything that we might be able to address to our particular towns since we have you on this call that you would like us to speak about?
Are you looking about how do we promote this as this is a, is that what you're trying to?
Correct. Are there any particular ways we can promote this or is that you are looking to address since we'll have you on this call and we have the audience in our next article?
I think, Kim, were you planning to announce the, I think that Kim and I had had a conversation on that as to how this gets promoted through, you know, your organization. And I think Kim had mentioned that there will be something coming up in the newsletter.
Robin, you and I can speak about this.
Okay. So there's something coming out.
Yes. Yep.
And we'd be happy to support in any way we can.
Okay. I just didn't know if the towns here had anything in particular they wanted to add, so of interest.
Well, certainly, if any of the members of the committee have some ways or thoughts of how best to promote this or how to highlight it, how to grab, you know, that teaser, certainly share that with Kim and Robin. But I think this, along with, and perhaps a passing thought, is we haven't, I haven't seen anything recently regarding our HR services that we've contracted with, that, so maybe that could be combined together. I agree with what Yvonne said and Leroy said, that this is not just HR based, but there may be an opportunity just to also promote that service that the CROG staff had put together several months ago as well.
You know, and we as an organization be happy to chat with any town management that is looking to move beyond what they're doing, including you, Peter. so we'd be happy to chat with you and let you know, you know, how we might be able to support you. And, you know, realizing that in this space, it's a journey, right? And that journey requires time, because, you know, we're all humans and we don't change as rapidly as some others. So it's that effort that is required to really begin to establish sustainability with some metrics that you're able to measure on an ongoing basis, and be able to be proactive as to some of the things that you can do to continue on that journey.
Great. So, well, thank you very much. Thank you particularly to Daniel Penn for your interest in serving the Capital Region Council of Government Towns. And thank you to staff at CROG for getting us to this point. So we will certainly talk this up and see if we can get a few towns engaged sooner rather than later on this, as you said, this journey.
Thank you so much for the time. Alrighty. and thank you, Kim, for your support.
A pleasure. Nice to be with
thank
all of you.
You.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you. Great. Good luck, man.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
All righty. Thanks, Kim. All right, so let's move on. And Matt, you want to do a quick executive director? And who's that guy right there? Like a new CROG staff member?
Indeed. Yep. So Matt Hart here. I'll keep it quick in the interest of time. I'm in my third week. Everyone's been great. Staff's been wonderful. I really appreciate the support. As those of you on the policy board and the executive committee know, now I am reaching out to all of the member towns, and over time would like to have the opportunity to sit down with you and talk about the good work that CROG's doing and what more we can do together. And of particular interest for this committee, and we'll get into this more when we get to the RPIP discussion. You know, Peter and I have had a chance to talk about this a little bit some weeks ago. What more might we want to consider with respect to shared services? And might we even want to consider CROG retaining additional staff or consultants to provide more direct services to our member communities? For example, are there positions that you're struggling to recruit and attract and retain, perhaps because you can only retain someone on a part-time basis? But anyhow, I'm excited about that opportunity, looking forward to that discussion, as well as advancing all the other projects and initiatives that this committee has been focused on. I'll keep it short today, but just know that If I haven't reached out to you already, I will be in the relatively near future. Thank you, Peter.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Matt. Any questions with Matt since we've got him in a captive audience? 11:21. All right. Great. Thanks. Thanks, Matt. We have a few status reports, and I'm going to leave that, Pauline, with you. You can direct traffic on this item.
So we will be, as requested, as we discussed last month, we will be going out for a budget software presentation RFP. I guess that's the best way to describe it. You know, those of you who are familiar with ClearGov, OpenGov, and a few others. Question is, are there any volunteers to be on the review committee and to review the RFP, et cetera?
What's your general time frame, Pauline, do you think we'll get? Is it development of RFP or is it more on the review end?
Both sides. We'll take on either side. If you can only do one or the other, we'll take that.
What's your general time frame? You think you're going to be? I'm just trying to see who I can grab for my staff, perhaps knowing what their workload is, and timing would be helpful.
I think in terms of timeline, we were originally thinking about putting this in the next fiscal year work plan, but we figured we could get started soon. So I would say having the RFP out, I'm looking at Kim here since she's running that process, probably April, and then getting it back May.
Yeah. Depending on if you're going to, what boilerplate you're going to use. And I know some other towns have in the last couple of years have done that. So you may have a boilerplate. I'm just thinking, I know from my staff's perspective, April and the first 2 weeks of May are not good.
So we could have the review part be done middle to end of May. So have the RFPs return by the end of May and then do the review at that point.
On the review side, that's fine. I thought you wanted some folks to be available in the RFP development too. And I know that would be tough for at least my team.
I think we could probably cover that on our side. We
have a fairly strong draft pulled together, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
At this point, so.
John, you had your hand up. Did I see John?
No, I was just agreeing with.
You muted yourself.
Undo.
I was saving you all. I was agreeing that April's a tough month. That's all.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. So
we'll shoot for. So the bulk of the work will be end of May. How about terms of so it don't all come crashing the door down right now, but. If you are interested, send a Kim or I an email on that.
And we meet again on April 19th, so we can throw a friendly reminder out there to all of you who are dying to help with this.
Well, I can tell you from Windsor perspective, we've already taken a look at a few of them and we can't seem to get off the dime. We like some parts of this, the other parts of the other. So, but great.
Yeah.
Solid waste. My favorite topic.
Liar, liar.
By the way, there's an NPR article out that has Peter and Lyle in it. I think we're
mostly Lyle, with the way it should be.
Robin, if I may, just the update on that is that the consultants, we did get responses back from the consultants, and they're under review. This week by different people. So that's under review at this point.
Robin or Pauline, how many responses did you get that you think are suitable?
We're down to two.
Out of how many?
Out of three.
Okay. Yep.
But we threw the third one out because it was not within the scope of what we were expecting. Let me put it that way.
Great.
So we're really down to two. One of them is So we'll see how the evaluation goes.
And you have folks to evaluate that?
Yes, we have a full evaluation team set up with our evaluation period through this Friday. Following, depending on how the scoring comes back, we're probably going to do an interview period.
Yeah.
That we have, we'll see how the scoring comes back from the evaluation team through the next stage.
Yeah, now I've forgotten their names again. Russ Arnold,
their names, but,
Mike Bezai are on the evaluation, and Matt said he would look at it as well.
Yeah, we have a good set of people. We have like five people plus some CROG people, meaning me and Pauline. We're the CROG people. So we have some people from different backgrounds and some municipal services towns as well reviewing the RFP as well. So I think we have two strong contenders. In
great.
We said we had one that just didn't meet the minimum requirements. They were way off base, so we couldn't review.
Great. And that would come back, and Pauline, that would come back to the policy board after all interviews for a resolution to approve contract. Great.
Yes.
I have a quick question. Is this for hauling for the region?
Unfortunately, it's not. But if people want, we could definitely go out for that.
It's for
a long term.
Long-term
option scenario planning type of a deal in terms of the consultants looking at what are the long-term options. It's really something that
I went beyond MIRA's plan because MIRA originally provided the next couple of years. So we were looking to go beyond what were our scenarios if MIRA wasn't, basically if MIRA failed.
As I see it from the chairperson's perspective, it was a way to try to kickstart some kind of conversations with DEP in the governor's office.
Got it.
Since they've not exactly moved the ball forward.
Okay. So. Yeah. Because I know we've already decided to get out of MIRA. So I was just, that's why I was curious.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, speaking of MIRA, I believe at 2 o'clock or sometime tomorrow, we're having an updated meeting at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow, they're having another public meeting and they issued another letter that is out there, that is on the website, that is available for all towns, that has the new tonnage. I believe it's 11.
It's 111.
116. So that's all up there for all towns right now. So I'm attending and whoever else can put the word out there. So that will be their update. And because most towns have opted out. Most towns.
Just so you know, I just negotiated a 5-year contract with Casella. And it's like $80 a ton.
See, there you go. See, that's the other word I heard, that most towns were either doing that with their own current hauler or did one-offs as well, too. So MIRA's update should be quite interesting tomorrow.
And recycling.
John, what was that? 80. What was that number? 89?
80.
80. Wow. Yeah. So MIRA's way.
Including transport?
Well, let me check it. Maybe my memory is failing as I get older, but we have a 5-year contract, and I can send it to Robin. But
does that include recyclables, John?
Recycling is a different thing, and
sure is.
it's a variable rate depending on the quality and the commodities market. That actually could go down from what we're paying $30 now. It could actually be less or more, but it's a variable rate. But Casella bought out Willimantic Waste. They have markets all over New England, including landfills. So it's not just rail trailheads. So I'll send it out, but we just opened that a couple weeks ago and just accepted it last week. So
that's great.
Gives people a benchmark.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could send it out. And just as an update, we were thinking of doing like a food waste RFI. So, CROG. So,
well, we just approved an anaerobic digester too. So, I want to talk about that. One of our farms is doing an anaerobic digester, and we're looking for funding to do a depacking plant to go with it.
Mm.
So you got to go to the small towns to get things done.
That's very true, John.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot going on our own, on the outskirts here, outside of what, yeah. So thank you for that update, John, if you could send that.
We pulled out a mirror about 7 or 8 years ago because we didn't like the direction that CRRA was going. Mm-hmm. So we got out early.
Some of us never got in, good for the better or worse. But all righty. So that's enough trash talking, I think, at this point. Municipal information sharing.
So there's a couple of items on this. The first is that there is a Connecticut Urban Forest Grant Council grant opportunity, and that's that link is available from the meeting notes, and it's just for 501c3 and nonprofits. The second item is Glastonbury asked us to bring this forward regarding the state building code and windows and bedrooms. So apparently, with new construction, you don't need a window to have a bedroom. And they were wondering if that's something that Municipal Services Committee or CROG wanted to request from a change with regards to with the state building official. And so bringing it to the Municipal Services Committee, they sent it to me. So I'm wondering if people have an opinion or if we just, or not.
Well, I have plenty of opinions, but I'm not informed enough to be able to, I find that hard to believe that the building code doesn't require some type of window. So anybody else have a perspective on this? I'd have to talk to, I guess I'm sharing my building official with South Windsor right now. So I guess I have to talk to South Windsor's building official to get his perspective. But I'm not sure if it's really at this point, with our bailiwick, we know how long it takes to change the darn state building code. They're still working on 19 now. So I don't know, what do folks think? Any strong desires either way? Want to just talk to our building officials? And
I don't think it should rise to the top of our list.
Okay.
Various opinions, more windows, less energy efficiency, more cost. And the number of house fires that people die in are dramatically less. I'd rather go for water sprinklers, low pressure water sprinklers, if you want to be fire safe.
Yeah, I don't have enough to. So, all right. So if you pass it along, I don't know. I will have a conversation with my building folks just to get an understanding what the heck is, what's the rationale there, but not for the Municipal Services Group.
Great.
Wonderful. Alrighty, we've got some brownfield grant opportunities.
Yep, that's just informational for people to know that is round 15. That's out.
So Pauline, before we go on to the RPIP, there is another Connecticut Urban Forestry grant opportunity. They're having a second round, which is a much larger dollar amount. We were successful in getting about $35,000 in the first round. I'll see if I can track down what that time frame is, Pauline, and I'll send it to you. But just so folks know, there is another. They're supposed to be doing two rounds. One was in, I believe, December, was announced in December. I think the other one is coming up some point in this calendar year.
Okay.
So it was through Connecticut Urban Forestry Council as well.
Okay. And we'll be sure to get that out.
All righty. We want to talk about RPIP.
Fun time. So RPIP has been revived. And there are some changes from previous years. The biggest being that studies are no longer allowed. OPM is budgeting $5 million, and it requires the second kind of bigger thing is that it requires a 25% match from another source. And 3 years is the maximum length of the grant and for the service. And afterwards, it has to be self-sustaining. So those are some of the major changes in our PIP. And we had some initial ideas, and I'm going to actually let Matt take this part, if I may.
All right. Thank you, Pauline. So just building on, you know, the brief discussion earlier, wondering if there's an interest from the committee, and we are working on a survey to help get at this, but are there positions we might have an interest in sharing, or who could support some number of our member towns? I know in the past, we've talked about economic development as one example. I recall participating in those conversations when I was in Mansfield. We've talked about GIS. Other ideas that come to mind could be capital projects administration, emergency management, maybe even code enforcement. I know there are at least one or two COGs in the state that actually employ zoning officers that support some of their smaller towns. So wanted to see if there was an interest in going in that direction. And I think as Pauline just explained, you know, over a 3 year period, the grant would subsidize, and Pauline, feel free to correct me if needed, at 75%, 50% in the second year, 25% in the third year. That should give us ample opportunity to determine whether or not this program is working. And then in the fourth year, it would become 100% on either the member towns that are participating or CROG. And we could think about how CROG could subsidize the program in some manner.
So
that's an idea we wanted to put out there and get your initial reaction. And again, we can prepare a survey as well to better ascertain the needs from our members. Pauline, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, just a point of clarification, the 25, 50, 75% was my thought, my idea in terms of that step, in terms of the local match, so that the towns, whoever's taking on the service can be sort of absorb, you know, not get sticker shock in year after year three with regards to their sort of share for that. That was my idea.
Pauline, what clarify for me, when's OPM looking for these applications? Is it?
So they're taking them on a rolling basis, but the first time that they're going to review is August 1st. So we have a little bit of time to sort of put things together. We were internally thinking that we would try to get something in by July, by the first week of July, so that we make sure that we make that August 1st deadline, or make sure that if there's anything missing, we can get it before then.
Thank you. What do folks think? Lisa.
Peter, hi. How about something like an animal control facility, like a shared ACO officer and facility? Do you think something like that would be good under this program? To
we'll take the whole $5 million.
Regional... right. What was that?
We'll take the whole $5 million if you look at what they built in South Windsor.
Well, you know, South Windsor does everything big over there.
To animal go control ahead, does work up in the northeast corner. Northeast COG works well.
Yeah.
Offline, I'll tell you.
That would take the whole thing for this.
For a facility, definitely. If we're looking for staffing, that's a different. I think that's probably much more manageable, but Bonnie, did you have a thought, or did I?
Code enforcement was my thing. Boy, I could really use some assistance with that. And I really like the thoughts of capital projects administration, but my only concern is with all of us getting ARPA money and we have so many capital projects, I don't know if this poor person or persons would be able to keep up, but I would love somebody who could do something like that.
Okay.
I'm with Bonnie on code enforcement too.
When you say code enforcement, are you thinking when Lisa and Bonnie, you're thinking about like property maintenance, or you're thinking about building inspection or housing code stuff?
Zoning. I'm thinking property maintenance. Yeah, I'm thinking like zoning enforcement, as well as blight, things like that. But you know, you do mention building inspection, and I know, for example, Vernon is looking for someone right now. They're having a difficult time. Because I stole them. So, who else?
I stole them.
Nice guy, John.
There's more towns looking than have them, I think, right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that could be another need somewhere as well, or at least, you know, if some towns are having some huge projects going on, maybe a major development that they normally don't have, maybe having someone that they could share once in a while to.
I'm from my perspective, it's almost like we have to create a pipeline there. Yeah. You know, that's there just aren't very many inspectors. We're just in that trough. And the, you know, the talent is just not either there because of the economics, or they just, you know, folks have, but I probably asked 5 or 6 folks to come out of retirement or to work even 20 hours for 3 months. Not even a bite, not even nimble.
Peter, so, I'll send you my retired guy who's really good.
Please do. Please do. Maybe I'll share him with Vernon.
He doesn't want to work there.
All right. And definitely wants to work in Windsor then, that's for sure. So, so Matt, I like the idea of a structured survey. I think you may be all over the, we may have a lot of different ideas, but I think that might, you know, may at least figure out where we are. But I'm just looking of how, is that 5 million statewide for?
That's nothing.
Yes.
Pretty small pot. How much money, if you would like to share, if you have it, Pauline, what do we have in our, I don't know what CROG calls it, what we call it, the regional fund?
Yeah, the regional fund is 1.5 million, give or take.
So
round numbers.
Yep. But which we've got some plans to chew into that, you know, obviously with some of the consulting work that we've got, but at least we have a source of money.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I think Bob had his hand up at one point.
I was just going to mention, along the lines of building officials, we have the similar issue with assessing. We have incredibly difficulties trying to find an assessor. I know there's a number of other towns that have that same issue. So, John, if you have a retired assessor, I certainly could use one. So
I'm looking for one, but the last one didn't retire.
Okay. That is a reoccurring issue. And so if there's something we could do about regional assessing, or, you know, have an assessor hired by CROG that's hired out, or whatever the system is, that would be very helpful.
Okay. Talon's having a similar situation, not with our assessor, but a technician. And we're on our fourth try going out again for that position. The talent's just not out there, not just for assessors, for finance directors, accountants, town managers. You know, there's all kinds of needs, but I don't think you want to be sharing those positions. When you're done with this, I do have another question about the previous regional grant. Just let me know when I can ask about that one.
Go ahead and ask, please.
Okay. Last year, or right before COVID hit, there was the joint effort that Talon was trying to get a study done. Now, I know the new grant does not allow for studies, but are the funds still available under the old grant for the study that we had applied for to try to look at the Board of Ed and Town merger?
Yeah, what happened with that is that they swept it. They swept that for COVID.
Okay.
Or that's what they said.
Because the state has no money, right? They swept it. They had to sweep it. They have no money.
That's fine. I just know that's a major goal of our town council, and you know, I can't comment either way how I feel about it. But if I'm given that direction, I need to find a way to make that happen. So.
Change the state law.
All righty. So that any kind of direction enough, Matt and Pauline, regarding our PIP?
I think so. You know, thank you all for your good ideas. We'll craft a survey that's consistent. You know, maybe run it by you, Peter, and then send it out.
Oh, great. I think there's... All righty. Anything else under number six, municipal information sharing? Everyone got their budgets all buttoned up, ready to...
Oh, one question.
John?
Yeah. What are people doing with the governor's auto tax? Because the numbers the governor's office gave us, obviously, were based on the wrong grand list. But, you know, I'm carrying a huge reduction in an auto property in my grand list compared to what it would be if this didn't happen. I just didn't know what other people were doing.
Yeah. Anybody want to share? Lisa?
Sure. In my proposed budget, I went along as if the 29 mil rate cap wasn't coming into play. That's how I'm proposing it. However, when I discussed the mill rate and the calculation of it, I did discuss the governor's proposal, and I did an analysis that looks at the amount of money that we're supposed to get if this goes through versus what I would have gotten had it stayed at the mill rate that we would have been at. And it falls short about $330,000.
Yeah, we're right in the same ballpark, $300,000.
Yeah. So what I did was I showed them what the mill rate would be with the same budget if I had to implement that 29 mil cap. So we were really fortunate with some grand list growth this year. Of course, the grand list growth was mostly in motor vehicles. So I was able to have a mill rate reduction with my proposal going forward, but I showed them what the reduction would be with the cap and without the cap, but I'm proposing it without the cap. And feel free to go online at talon.org. I have an online with ClearGov, and you could see the budget there, as well as my presentations will be online as well, where I discuss it under budget.
John, that's pretty much how I'm going to handle it, is not factor it into the calculations, but speak to it in my transmission.
All right. Because setting the mill rate is always a separate thing from the approval of the budget. So I guess if you get the budget approved and then the legislature screwed us. Sorry. Actually a third of a mill more.
Yeah. And I know in Windsor, we've got some luxury because that mill rate, we don't have a referendum until the second week of May. And then tax rate doesn't get set to another 2 weeks after that. So we're a week after that. So we got a little bit of time to see how it plays out. Anybody else? How's anyone else treating it? Ignoring it? Melissa?
We're including the assumption that the cap will be 29, at least in the town manager's proposed budget.
So what's that doing to you guys? What's that dynamic doing for you? Because they're gonna.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's not major, assuming the offset comes through.
Yeah. Gotcha.
We did not include it. If we had, it would have been a loss of about 64,000, I think, somewhere in there.
And you guys are way ahead of me, man. I'm still in department head review, so.
Well, you got, Bonnie, you're pretty much on the same schedule as Windsor, aren't you? You have to be the first week. You have to submit your budget.
First town in Connecticut? Is that what you're saying, Peter?
No.
First town in Connecticut, Weathersfield or Windsor? Is that, you get into that argument?
Yeah, we're sending them a John Mason statue tomorrow.
Too mean.
Are you guys still fighting about that? Come on, just face it. It's Weathersfield was the first town.
Not at all. Not at all. It's on our letterhead. We're good.
So what's your question, Peter?
No, I didn't know what your timing was. I thought you submitted your, don't you have to submit your budget the first week of April? What do you got?
It has to go to council April 4th. So gotcha. This weekend is my deliberation weekend. So they can get it to the printers, but.
No. Yeah. Good deliberating.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any other information sharing or questions or?
I have a quick question. Some of the council members here, I mean, they would like to talk to a company if anybody's worked with somebody who has done long range planning suggestions on how to try to keep the same amount of services when you have a grand list that doesn't go anywhere. So, because Weathersfield's built out. I mean, if they don't do redevelopment, there's nothing else I can do. So I didn't know if anybody ever worked with or had a suggestion of somebody I could just contact.
God might be available.
Who?
God,
right, exactly.
Hey, Matt, what do you think about Julia Novak and Raftellis? Would they get into any of that from an operational perspective?
Yeah, they certainly might. You know, firms like AECOM and others. I'll shoot you an email with some ideas, Bonnie.
Oh, great. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Bonnie, are they looking at, they're not looking at a redevelopment. They're looking at more operational and services, correct?
Yes, correct. Yep.
There's also this little thing called revenue diversity that we don't seem to want to touch here.
Oh boy, you definitely should. As one who worked in Missouri and the property taxes were very cheap because you had so many other taxes that you could rely on as a municipality. Whole different world.
Yep. Whole different world. Brings all sorts of different other dynamics too, Bonnie.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
So, well, great.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt.
Anybody have anything else? If not, we can stand adjourned. And April 19th, I believe, is our next meeting scheduled. So, folks have ideas for agenda items. Send them along to Pauline and I, and we always like to have a few things in the pipeline. So, all righty.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Enjoy springtime.
Happy budget. Bye.
Bye, everyone.